Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. We begin on the front page with immigration crackdown. ICE work shakes U.S. labor market. Loss of labor, foreign talent threatens whole economy, experts warn. By Paul Wiseman and Gisela Salomon with the AP. Maria worked cleaning schools in Florida for $13 an hour. Every 2 weeks, she'd get a $900 paycheck from her employer, a contractor. Not much, but enough to cover rent in the house that she and her 11-year-old son share with five families, plus electricity, a cell phone, and groceries. In August, it all ended. When she showed up at the job one morning, her boss told her that she couldn't work there anymore. The Trump administration had terminated President Joe Biden's humanitarian parole program, which provided legal work permits for Cubans, Haitians, Venezuelans, as well as Nicaraguans like Maria. "I feel desperate," said Maria, 48, who requested anonymity to talk about her ordeal because she fears being detained and deported. "I don't have any money to buy anything. I have $5 in my account. I'm left with nothing." President Donald Trump's sweeping crackdown on immigration is throwing foreigners like Maria out of work and shaking the American economy and job market. And it's happening at a time when hiring is already deteriorating amid uncertainty over Trump's erratic trade policies. Immigrants do jobs, cleaning houses, picking tomatoes, painting fences, that most native-born Americans won't, and they do them for less money. But they also bring technical skills and entrepreneurial energy. Trump is attacking immigration at both ends of the spectrum, deporting low-wage laborers and discouraging skilled foreigners from bringing their talents to the United States. He is also targeting an influx of foreign workers that eased labor shortages and upward pressure on wages and prices at a time when most economists thought that taming inflation would require sky-high interest rates and a recession, a fate the United States escaped in 2023 and in 2024. "Immigrants are good for the economy," said Lee Brandstetter, an economist at Carnegie Mellon University. "Because we had a lot of immigration over the past 5 years, an inflationary surge was not as bad as many people expected. More workers filling more jobs and spending more money has also helped drive economic growth and create even more job openings. Economists fear that Trump's deportations and limits on even legal immigration will do the reverse." In a July report, researchers Wendy Edelberg and Tara Watson of the centrist Brookings Institution and Stan Vuger of the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute calculated that the loss of foreign workers will mean that monthly U.S. job growth could be near zero or negative in the next few years. Hiring has already slowed significantly, averaging a meager 29,000 a month from June through August. The September jobs report has been delayed by the ongoing shutdown of the federal government. By contrast, employers added 400,000 jobs a month during the post-pandemic hiring boom of 2021 to 2023. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, citing fallout from Trump's immigration and trade policies, downgraded its forecast for U.S. economic growth this year to 1.4%, down from the 1.9% it had previously expected. Goodwin Living, an Alexandria, Virginia nonprofit that provides senior housing, health care, and hospice services, had to lay off four employees from Haiti after the Trump administration terminated their work permits. The Haitians had been allowed to work under a humanitarian parole program and had earned promotions at Goodwin. "It was a very, very difficult day for us," CEO Rob Liebrich said. "It was really unfortunate to have to say goodbye to them, and they're still struggling to fill those roles." Liebrich is worried that another 60 immigrant workers could lose their temporary legal right to live and work in the United States. "We need all those hands," he said. "We need all these people." Goodwin Living has 1,500 employees, 60% of them from foreign countries. It has struggled to find enough nurses, therapists, and maintenance staff. Trump immigration crackdown, Liebrich said, is making it harder. Trump's immigration ambitions were once viewed with skepticism because of the money and economic disruption required to reach his goal of deporting 1 million people a year. But legislation Trump signed into law on July 4th, and which Republicans call the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, suddenly made his plans plausible. The law pours $150 billion into immigration enforcement, setting aside $46.5 billion to hire 10,000 Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents, and $45 billion to increase the capacity of immigrant detention centers. Last month, immigration authorities raided a Hyundai battery plant in Georgia, detained 300 South Korean workers, and showed video of some of them shackled in chains. They'd been working to get the plant up and running, bringing expertise in battery technology and Hyundai procedures that local American workers did not have. The incident enraged the South Koreans and ran counter to Trump's push to lure foreign manufacturers to invest in America. America's farmers are among the president's most dependable supporters. But John Boyd Jr., who farms 1,300 acres of soybeans, wheat, and corn in southern Virginia, said the immigration raids and the threat of them are hurting farmers already contending with low crop prices, high costs, and fallout from Trump's trade war with China, which has stopped buying U.S. soybeans and sorghum. "You've got ICE out here, hurting these people up," said Boyd, founder of the National Black Farmers Association. "Trump says they're murderers and thieves and drug dealers, all of this stuff. But these are people who are in this country doing hard work that many Americans don't want to do." Boyd scoffed at U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins' suggestion in July that U.S.-born Medicaid recipients could head to the fields to meet work requirements imposed this summer by the Republican Congress. Quote, "People in the city aren't coming back to the farm to do this kind of work," close quote. He said, quote, "It takes a certain type of person to bend over in 100-degree heat," close quote. Jed Kolko of the Peterson Institute for International Economics said that job growth is slowing in businesses that rely on immigrants. Construction companies, for instance, have shed 10,000 jobs since May. "Those are the short-term effects," said Kolko. A Commerce Department official in the Biden administration, the longer-term effects are more serious because immigrants traditionally have contributed more than their share of patents, innovation, and productivity. Especially worrisome to many economists was Trump's sudden announcement last month that he was raising the fee on H-1B visas, meant to lure hard-to-find skilled foreign workers to the United States from as little as $215 to $100,000. The $100,000 visa fee is not just a bureaucratic cost. It's a signal. Danny Bahar, senior fellow at the Center for Global Development. It says, quote, to global talent, you're not welcome here. In Bloomington news, we have Noel named Nursing Academy Fellow by Olivia Jacobs. Brenda Lesson Knoll, Associate Professor of Nursing and Illinois Wesleyan alumna, has been inducted as a fellow in the American Academy of Nursing. According to a statement from Illinois Wesleyan, her induction is the most prestigious national honor in the field of nursing. Knoll was honored Saturday, October 18th, during a ceremony held in Washington, D.C. Knoll is internationally known for her development and instruction of premature infant oral motor intervention, a form of physical therapy proven to help premature infants develop essential motor skills, according to IWU. More than 200 neonatal intensive care units across 50 countries have implemented this therapy as standard care, including OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. I am deeply humbled and grateful for my work to be recognized for such a prestigious award, Noel said in a news release. This is an amazing acknowledgement of my contributions in research and innovation, and although it's a career pinnacle moment, it's not my endpoint. There are more premature infants to reach, more work to be done, and I feel both the passion and the weight of obligation to continue the journey. Now, as a fellow in the American Academy of Nursing, Noel will be able to join national research councils and advisory panels where she plans to continue to focus on neonatal care. We are incredibly proud of Dr. Noel and her induction as a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing, said Amber Kujath, Dean of the School of Nursing and Health Services and IWU Nursing alumna. This prestigious recognition is a testament to her extraordinary contributions to advancing health and nursing practice. As both a faculty member and alumna of Illinois Wesleyan University, Dr. Noel exemplifies the highest ideals of our profession. Her achievement is not only a personal honor, but a moment of pride for our entire university community. Noel received her bachelor's degree from Illinois Wesleyan in 1989. She earned her master's degree in 1995 as a community nurse specialist with a focus on maternal child nursing at the University of Illinois in Chicago. She also holds a doctorate in neonatal science and research from the University of Illinois, Chicago. From the Chicago Tribune's Jake Sheridan and Dan Petrella, we have Pritzker Dim on remote classes. Mayor Johnson seeks e-learning option to shield, quote, all of Chicago. Mayor Brandon Johnson urged Governor J.B. Pritzker Friday to weigh allowing Chicago public school students to learn from home because ICE agents are arresting parents and students on their way to and from schools. Pritzker later took a dim view of the idea, saying kids belong in classrooms and pointing to ways schools and residents have already taken steps to protect students and their parents from federal immigration raids. Asked during a news conference if he's considering implementing remote learning at Chicago public schools, Johnson said, quote, "There are people who are afraid to go to school, are afraid to go to work," close quote, before shifting shot-calling responsibilities to Pritzker. Quote, "The Chicago Board of Education is asking the governor for a declared state of emergency. That's his authority. That's something that I certainly believe that should be considered, right, to keep people safe," close quote. Then again, he reiterated, quote, "That's his authority, that's not mine," close quote. Pressed further later, Johnson said he has not spoken directly with the governor about such an emergency declaration. "I don't know if they're actually going to do that, but I understand that there is a worthwhile conversation around making sure that we're protecting all of Chicago," the mayor said. Appearing at a separate news conference on Friday, Pritzker was asked whether he would consider the move to remote learning. He noted schools are well prepared to prevent ICE agents from getting inside buildings and added, "You've seen a lot of neighborhood programs that have developed to support the parents also." Quote, "That entire system that's been put together is one the state continues to support. We think that it's the best way to go. Remember, very importantly, I think one thing we learned during COVID is that remote learning really has a deleterious effect on kids' ability to get the kind of education they need. So we're going to do everything we can to keep kids in school where they are safer," said Pritzker. As detentions by federal immigration swell and President Donald Trump's Operation Midway Blitz, school board members at their monthly meeting Thursday urged CPS to take more action, including implementing remote learning options for students unable to attend school because of immigration fears. "Our parents are asking for remote learning if possible. This is an emergency, period. This is an emergency right now," Johnson appointee Emma Lozano said during the meeting. "The district cannot unilaterally implement remote learning," interim CPS CEO Macquilline King said. "Only the governor's office has the authority to do so in emergency situations, while maintaining schools are the safest place for students to be. Chicago schools have been the site of numerous intense efforts to protect students and their parents from federal immigration agents. Aldermen have put together volunteer lookouts near school buildings. CPS has expanded its 24-hour student safety center with a team dedicated to triaging federal law enforcement incidents, and the Chicago's Teachers Union has organized watch teams of its own. During Thursday's meeting, a high-ranking CTU member backed the district's virtual academy as a potential to ensure students can attend school while family members feel it is dangerous to leave home. Johnson and Pritzker weighed in on the situation as federal agents were spotted near several Chicago schools again on Friday. In Wicker Park, Alderman Daniel Laspada cycled around Rudy Lozano Elementary School, searching for vehicles with license plates tied to immigration agents. Laspada pointed out a corner where he said agents grabbed a person Friday morning. He rolled to a stop near a group of about two dozen volunteers who showed up to watch out for agents and show support during Lozano student pickup. Quote, there's a number of schools in the ward where we've seen attendance drop-offs because of families feeling scared to show up, he said. You should never have to feel like that. Continuing on the subject of immigration raids in Chicago, we have sharp escalation. Critics say Chicago apartment raid in September was out of proportion, by Tim Sullivan with the AP. In late September, immigration agents launched a massive raid on a Chicago apartment building, deploying heavily armed agents who stormed the building from the ground floor, while others rappelled onto the roof from a Black Hawk helicopter. The raid ended with 37 immigrants arrested, officials said, but the apartments of dozens of U.S. citizens were also targeted, and at least half a dozen Americans were zip-tied and held for hours. The immense show of force signaled a sharp escalation in the White House's immigration crackdown and amplified tensions in a city already on edge. Authorities claimed the raid, led by U.S. Customs and Border Protection, targeted the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, though officials said only two of the 37 immigrants arrested were actually gang members. The others were in the country illegally, they said, including some with criminal histories. One U.S. citizen was arrested on an outstanding narcotics warrant. The raid came during the Chicago immigration crackdown dubbed Operation Midway Blitz, which began in early September with some arrests in Latino neighborhoods, but surged across the city. It included increasing patrols by masked, armed agents, detentions of U.S. citizens and immigrants with legal status, a fatal shooting, and a protesting pastor shot in the head with a pepper ball outside a suburban immigration facility with his arms raised. In early October, authorities said more than 1,000 immigrants were arrested across the area. The raids shook the city. We have a rogue, reckless group of heavily armed, masked individuals roaming throughout our city, Mayor Brandon Johnson said after the September 30th raid, using language that would have sounded like political hyperbole just a few weeks earlier. The Trump administration is seeking to destabilize our city and promote chaos. Tony Wilson, a third-floor resident born and raised on Chicago's South Side, was among those detained. It was like we were under attack, Wilson said, days after the raid. Agents used a grinder to cut out his door's deadbolt, and he still couldn't close the door properly, let alone lock it. He had barricaded himself inside, blocking the door with furniture, and spoke through the hole where his doorknob used to be. It was terrible, man, said Wilson, who was zip-tied, taken from the building, and held for more than 2 hours before being released. He has barely left the apartment since. Owned by out-of-state investors, the building hasn't passed an inspection in 3 years, with problems ranging from missing smoke detectors to the stench of urine to filthy stairways. Wisconsin resident Trinity Flood, a lead investigator in the limited liability company that owns the building, did not respond to our calls for comment. The White House claims gang members and immigrants in the U.S. illegally swarm Chicago and crime is rampant. Soldiers are needed to protect government facilities from raging left-wing protesters, officials say. The reality is far less dramatic. Violence is rare at protests, though angry confrontations are increasingly common, particularly outside a federal immigration center in suburban Broadview. While crime is a serious problem, the city's murder rate has dropped by roughly half since the 1990s. To Trump's critics, the crackdown is a calculated effort to stir up anger in a city and state run by some of his most outspoken Democratic opponents. Out-of-control protests would reinforce Trump's tough-on-crime image, they say, while embarrassing Johnson and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, widely seen as a possible Democratic presidential contender. The South Shore raid, ready-made for social media with its displays of military hardware and agents armed for combat, was seen as wildly out of proportion. Less than 2 days after the raid, the Department of Homeland Security edited video of the raid into a series of dramatic shots, set it to music, and released it on social media. It has racked up more than 6.4 million views. Quote, "This was a crazy-looking military response they put together for their reality show," unquote, said Levante Stewart, who runs a popular South Shore sports program to steer young people away from violence. "It's not like there are roving bands of Venezuelan teenagers out there." Officials insist it was no reality show. The operation was based on months of intelligence gathering, according to a U.S. official not authorized to discuss the matter publicly. The landlord told authorities that Venezuelans in about 30 units were squatters and had threatened other tenants, the official claimed, adding that the building's size necessitated the show of force. Immigration agencies declined further comments. And from Capital News Illinois, Hannah Meisel writes, "Judge to rule on swipe fee ban." A law that would make Illinois the first jurisdiction in the world to ban financial institutions from charging, quote, "interchange fees," unquote, on the tax and tip portions of debit and credit card transactions finally got its day in court this week, nearly 18 months after its passage. U.S. District Judge Virginia Kendall's ruling, expected in the coming weeks, will determine the legality of the Interchange Fee Prohibition Act, which was folded into Illinois' fiscal year 2025 budget package in May 2024 by Democrats who control the General Assembly. The move was championed by the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, which positioned the law as pro-consumers, as retailers often pass the fees on to consumers. But other business groups, which are typically aligned with IRMA, balked at the idea, claiming it would cause credit card chaos. Nearly a year ago, Kendall issued a preliminary injunction preventing the law from applying to federally chartered banks, later extending it to out-of-state banks that operate in Illinois, after banks and credit unions sued over the law in August of 2024. But credit unions, Illinois-based banks, and credit card companies are not covered by the judge's ruling, so lawmakers this spring delayed the IFPA's effective date from July 1, 2025, for another year, giving the case time to play out in court. Anticipation for the ruling goes beyond just the parties in the case. In the last year, 22 other state legislators have considered and rejected similar bans on credit card swipe fees. But Illinois Bankers Association Executive Vice President Ben Jackson told reporters on Wednesday that the legal fight isn't the only avenue financial institutions are counting on. "Our legislative allies, and there are many of them, are really very eager to move forward with a repeal effort this spring," he said. The judge heard 2 hours of highly technical arguments Wednesday as she prepares to rule on the financial institution's motion for summary judgment. In their original lawsuit, plaintiffs argued the law would upend the intricate and carefully calibrated global systems for debit and credit card purchases. But Wednesday's arguments focused more on questions of law, including whether the state of Illinois exceeded its authority by adopting the IFPA. Charlotte Taylor, an attorney representing the Illinois Bankers Association, said financial institutions would suffer significant reductions in the amount of revenue received from Illinois retailers, restaurants, and other establishments in the hospitality industry. She argued that interchange is compensation because they are taking on the risk of fraud. I don't know of an agency relationship where the agent says, here's what you get paid, here's what it's going to be, take it or leave it, Taylor argued. But Darren Kinkin, a lawyer in Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office, argued banks are still getting plenty of interchange fees. They are not doing any work for which they are not being compensated, he said. Furthermore, Kinkin argued that the amount of interchange fees financial institutions would be able to collect would only be reduced by about 9 to 10%. 9% of anything is not extreme, he said. Like we've discussed before, 91% is still an A. But Taylor rebuffed Kinkade's argument. Imagining you're making 5% profit, which is a reasonable profit margin for a business. Then suddenly 10% of that profit is taken away, she said. Now you're operating at a 5% loss. Mithun Mansingani, an attorney representing the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, circled back to opponents' claims of credit card chaos in his friend of the court arguments on Wednesday. And in the Flick Fact today, we have true or false. One of the most recognized words in all the world is Visa, as in the credit card's name. But perhaps lesser known is that a Twin City bank conceived it. That's true. The McLean County Bank, site today of a Regions Bank at the corner of Empire and Towanda in Bloomington, is where the word Visa was first used for a savings plan. The bank copyrighted the word and in 1975 sold the copyright to Visa, the company that created the credit card, which was formerly the Bank AmeriCard. And they wanted Visa as its name instead. Visa, by the way, stands for Vacation Incentive Savings Account. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 28, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly to complete the reading in Part 2.